We are pre-recording out here in the middle of a beautiful farm, sitting at the farmhouse, which looks, as many of the places do in Amador, not at all like an old-fashioned farmhouse. It looks like a home in the forest, which it is. And we are at Harmony Farms. And I'm going to have one of the owners of Harmony Farms introduce herself to you and tell you where we are, why she is here, and everything that we can find out about her. I also have with me Andrea Macon, and she is going to be also asking questions here and there when you hear a voice come in. As a master food preserver, this interview is not just for every woman's hour so that we can all hear about women and farming. It's also for the master preservers. And also we're hoping that we can spread the word about how women make a difference when they are farmers in the mother lode. So please introduce yourself, Emily.
My name is Emily Beals.
I'm Emily Beal.
With an S at the end. I'm the owner and number one farmer of Harmony Hill Farm. I'm 6 miles between Mount Ockham and Fiddletown. We're actually in both counties because the South Fork of the Cosumnes River transects our property. And so I'm mostly in El Dorado County, but a little bit in Amador.
And those of you who are not sure of how that happened, remember that Amador is defined by the rivers, by the McCallum and the Cosumnes Rivers. So you're right on that river.
Correct.
Okay. Now, how many acres do you have here?
We have 10 acres of forest and meadows. We're 2,100 feet with lots of trees, beautiful oaks, pines, lots of native trees,
and a lot of
plants.
So we are in the forest.
Absolutely in the forest, but there's enough meadow that we have 3 large gardens, about 50 by 100 feet.
Wow.
And that's what I do.
In Wisconsin, we used to call those truck gardens. Is this like a truck garden?
Well, we don't drive trucks around in them. We don't drive tractors either. We're small enough that we have 1 large rototiller, which we seldom use, and the rest of it is hand tools, which is what I prefer.
So you are cultivating, what is that in acreage?
Probably about 2.5 acres.
With hand tools.
With hand tools.
Okay.
But some of that is an orchard of walnut, pear, and apple trees, about 50 trees. So maybe the gardens themselves are about 1.5 acres.
How many years have you been doing this?
Well, I retired early. I'm a former teacher, and I retired in my early 60s. And I've been living up here for 10 years. But we haven't been a farm. We've only been a farm for 3 years.
Oh. Somehow it feels much more established.
Yes, and it looks much more established. Mm-hmm. But life turns corners all the time. And 3 years ago, I went to an open house at Alice Kaiser's farm in Fiddletown. And I met her and some woofers. And that was the first time I'd known anything about woofers. And it was the first time I knew that there was somewhere I could sell my produce.
Okay, now that was a word.
Woofers. Woofers.
Right. What, spell that word.
That's
and tell
an
us
acronym.
What that means.
That's an acronym.
It's an acronym. Okay, what is it? How does
For
it?
For Worldwide Workers on Organic Farms.
Worldwide Workers on Organic Farms. Woofers.
Yes. And it's a very interesting program. It's mostly young people, but I've had elderly woofers as well come from all over the world and spend some time working on your farm in return for room and board, and working maybe 4 to 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, which is my plan. Everybody has a different way of doing it, but that's how we did it.
But most people do this work for room and board.
That's right.
So because you're not doing this. Travel. You're not doing this 2.5 acres then completely by yourself.
Well, most of the time I am. Okay. Woofers have their own challenges, and we won't go into that right now. But sometimes even farmers burn out of this kind of supervision that you need to provide woofers. And what happens is that you become a supervisor, and the number one worker on the farm ends up not working and becoming a supervisor of mostly fairly new, unskilled young people.
No, that's not. That sounds more familiar. Definitely in Wisconsin, especially during heavier seasons, college students and so on were hired, who had come right up from the cities, and they did take more supervision and care. They'd have more injuries and times that you'd have to get them up in the morning, and they ate more than your family did.
And, right.
Yeah, so definitely.
It's got its goods and bads,
yes. Okay, I can now I understand who they are.
Right.
Can
but I've met some wonderful people. Yes. Most of the woofers that I've had here have just been outstanding young people in their 20s, usually, from all kinds of different backgrounds. Some had just finished agricultural school in France and bring a world of knowledge, and others, one was a fisherman in his 50s from New Jersey who lost his fishing boat and decided to spend some time woofing. So you just meet a whole spectrum of people.
So it's almost like a foreign exchange program.
Exactly, it is. Okay. They've been here from China and Australia and France and all over.
Now, that's a whole other subject. It might
yes,
be fun
is.
When you have those workers here sometime to have some of the women involved come on to Every Woman's Hour and talk about
what that. It's like being a woofer. But
exactly, what
so
it's
Emily,
like from their viewpoint.
Have you ever considered being a woofer?
Yes, I have. Absolutely. It's a wonderful opportunity to travel.
Yeah. Oh, I would think so.
And to gain knowledge of what other people are doing on their mm-hmm. farms.
It seems like it would be a great way to learn about farms to farms across the country and different climates
and
things that work
world.
And don't work. Exactly. So maybe your next life, huh?
And maybe and maybe make some really good friends that you can visit again.
Exactly.
Wow, that's a whole other subject, and which means that I need to pull myself back into understanding more about what it is. So you became a farmer. You had been a teacher.
Well,
had
yes.
you been a gardener before?
I was a gardener, and okay. I was just having my own garden, and it was very abundant, and I had extra produce, and extra apples, and extra everything, and I was doing a lot of food bank trips, extra eggs, and the Amateur Food Bank was getting the bounty, and then I went to Alice's Open House and realized that there was a CSA, a local CSA, who was looking for farmers.
What is a CSA?
CSA is Community Supported Agriculture.
Okay.
And that's a worldwide program as well, and very popular in this country for many years, where farmers bring their produce to a central location, and then customers commit to getting that produce on a weekly basis.
Oh, okay. So that's when you can purchase the food boxes.
Yes, but more than that, you can purchase individual items in our CSA. Every CSA is a little bit different, but what's so fun about this one, which is in Jackson, started by Alice and some others about 5 or 6 years ago, is that you can purchase a box of weekly groceries, or you can shop at the farm. You can shop via computer for individual items. So I provide each week produce for the boxes, but I also provide whatever people go on their computer and order from me.
And they can order directly from you?
They can order through Motherlode Harvest directly from me, and I get a printout every Sunday.
That's
that
another group I was hoping
pick.
That we can interview at some point.
Oh,
was
yes.
The women
it would be a wonderful group. Alice, well, I can give you all kinds of names.
Okay, we will take all of those names because it's important. I know it's an important resource to many, many people and a very reasonable one. And yeah. even during the off seasons, which we're hoping to cover all of our women in agriculture and ranching and vineyards in their off seasons, there's still produce coming through.
Yes.
People can still buy.
That's right.
Year-round.
And there's more and more high tunnels or greenhouses that are being built on farms that are extending our seasons dramatically. And we're becoming a four-season farm. Our plan for this coming year is to put a high tunnel, is to build a high tunnel.
No, describe to people who aren't sure what a high tunnel is. Right. I know what they are, and probably Andrea does. But if you don't know, tell us what it is.
Right. It's like a greenhouse, but it's not quite as permanent as a greenhouse, and it's built out of different materials, usually heavy-duty polycarbonate, which is like a fiberglass clear panels, or just a clear polycarbonate plastic over PVC. It can be as portable or as permanent as you want it to be, and it can be very cheap or it can be very expensive. Just depends on.
And I've seen ones that are big enough that you can stand up in them,
right.
And ones that you have to flip them to work the
exactly
the land because you couldn't possibly fit in there along with your vegetables.
Exactly right.
There's a wide variety
of what you can do.
Now up here, you're at over 2,000 feet. What kinds of things do you raise during the year? I think that would be a big interest to people
right.
who are listening because they think farm, and we've told them we're in a forest, and there's meadows, and we're at 2,000 feet. What can you raise?
What can you grow? We can grow just about everything, believe it or not. Yeah.
Watermelons?
Absolutely.
Oh, my.
We have great watermelon.
Great tomatoes.
Great honeydew. We don't grow corn, although we could grow corn, but it's very water. Corn takes a lot of water and a lot of fertilizer, and we let Slough House grow the corn for us. But we could. I'd like to grow it just for the corn stalks for the fall because I love to decorate for the seasons, and having corn stalks in my fall decor would be fun. And the ornamental corn also. But we could grow gourds, tomatoes, beautiful tomatoes, green beans, lettuce, eggplant. I mean, we start in March, and we start planting, actually, in the greenhouse in February. We seed start in February with the spring crops, arugulas, lettuce, peas, the brassicas, cauliflowers, and cabbages, things that do well in cool weather. And then we just go all the way through the season, and about March, we seed start all of the summer heat-loving vegetables. And our season continues, and I seed start about every 2 weeks, starting in February.
Oh.
All the way through July.
That's interesting. So you're constantly transplanting.
Absolutely, or direct planting once the soil warms up in May. We don't put tomatoes in the ground at this elevation until May 15th. Which is quite late. So September is our burst of tomato time. And it's what I can the most of. Usually I'll can somewhere between 50 and 75 quarts.
Enough to last you the rest of the year for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And they're such a treat.
Yes.
And I just canned my tomatoes that you brought me. I got 30 pounds. I was not quite as industrious, but I might need to do another 20 or so to get me through the season. But they were fantastic. They were grape tomatoes.
Oh,
thank you so much.
That's great.
So you have enough then to share for the boxes and the
I do.
And for other people who are canning, the master preservers
that's right.
and for
And,
that's
and we
a,
grow
that's
a lot of varieties of tomatoes. We love the heirlooms, but we also grow some hybrids that are really dependable, Early Girl and Celebrity and things like those kinds. And then we...
Beefsteak?
Yes, beefsteak. Oh,
okay.
And then we grow the canners, the Romas, the San Marcianos. Marcianos. The Amish paste are good.
Amish paste?
Amish paste is a great canning tomato.
Wow, I had never even heard of that one.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of the best.
Oh, my. How long do you have tomatoes that some people do, I know, up here through November?
Depends on when we get our first frost. Sometimes it's late October, mid to late October, but because of global warming, it's later and later. So sometimes it'll be into November. So we could go through the end of October.
With fresh tomatoes. Yeah. In those boxes.
Yep.
That's it. That is inspiring. If people want to get involved in that part of the program, they can find it online.
Motherload Harvest.
Motherload Harvest.
Or mlharvest.com.
mlharvest.com.
Correct.
And they have all the prices there for every season, I noticed. They tend to change them, I noticed. It depends on what's available. And
that's right. And there's about 13 farmers that are providing the produce for this CSA.
Now, for this CFF, how many women do you think that are involved, as you are, calling the farms their farms, where it's not a family farm?
That's what's so exciting. Mm-hmm. I'm an older woman. This is my second career. I was a teacher in the Bay Area for 35 years, but waiting all my life to come up and be a gardener. And we just took it to the next level about 3 years ago and became a small farm. I gave it a name, and it just, my life took a turned a corner, and it's so fun. It's a heck of a lot of work. And we can talk about that later.
We will talk about that. We will talk about that, because as those of you listening know, that's part of the reason that we're on the air for you is to be honest with you about that. What we're making this all sound wonderful and idyllic, as if, as she said, we just put the seed in the ground and watch it grow. We're just watching it grow.
Exactly.
Nothing else. We don't have to do anything else. Once it's growing, it's happy. And in fact, there is a lot of work involved. And we'll take time doing that. For this interview, we had also let Emily know we will probably come back at some point to find out more about the work that's done for those of you who are interested in becoming agriculture women. So again, back to my question, how many women do you think are probably involved? Just a ballpark figure. It doesn't have to be totally accurate.
Here
in the Motherlode.
My partner, Dennis, and I just did a photo exhibit of all the farmers in this CSA.
Wow.
And most of them are women between the ages of 50 and 80.
Now that's amazing.
Yes.
There's a beauty to that. The beauty is that all of you who are older women there are thinking, well, I wouldn't be able to start now. Well, all these women did.
Absolutely.
The second part, though, is that this means that we need to be helping younger women to see that they could do this too, because somewhere after 70, some of these people are going to really retire. They're going to really go, I wish I had some young person who could take over this farm or had been trained.
Yes.
So we need to encourage our young women to get involved in the agriculture. Yes. Are there any programs that do that, to your knowledge?
Well, I had two wonderful woofers from Sweden. One was Swedish-Irish, and she desperately wants to come back and to be here and to do exactly what you're talking about, because that's her passion. And but getting a visa to do that is going to be a real challenge. It's not very possible, actually.
No, because there is a misnomer that there are actually enough workers in agriculture. It's a misnomer, as we all know who live here in California, because so many of the migrants who come up to work are not legal and can't stay, and they'd love to. They'd love to be relocated and be permanent agriculturalists.
Don't know any American women who are chomping at the bit to become farmers, but that doesn't mean they're not out there. It's just they haven't crossed my path. But I'd love to know anyone. I would welcome them to the farm, because at some point I too will say enough is enough and look for someone else to take over.
Yeah, and it's important to remember, though, that as important are the farmers are, it's also equally as important to support them. I mean, people ask me what I do often because they think I'm a farmer, and I'm no, I'm an eater. And so I'm careful about where I buy my food from that I'm going to eat, and I try to always support our local farmers and the people that are farming sustainably, which Emily does. Yeah. And so, I mean, if you can't be a farmer, you can still support them and do your share on that.
Yeah, that's really important. And not only is it ecologically intelligent to support local farming, the nutritional value of the food that you get is so much superior. And you get so much more for your buck mm-hmm. when the nutrition is at its peak.
Yeah.
From the moment it's picked, within 5 days, it has lost 50% of its nutritional wow. value. And when you think about how far food travels to our supermarkets and how much you're paying and how compromised the taste and the nutritional value is, it just makes sense to have local farms in your community providing you superior, nutritionally superior
Definitely.
And deliciously mm-hmm. superior. You should yep. taste our melons.
Oh, we would be happy
Twist
to.
Arm.
Twist arm. Exactly. Twist arm. This had brought to mind something that Andrea and I had just been talking about, which is that even when we're buying organically from the store now, it's not lasting in our refrigerators long. But if we buy something from the farmer's market that's just been picked that day,
yes.
or from a farmer, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 days later, you still have a fresh product.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
It because you assume that during harvest time in our area that what we're getting for organic vegetables is local, but it's been already sitting around too long before
yes.
to go through this, all the middlemen of the supermarket chain. I was wondering, the future farmers of America in our high schools up here in the Motherlode must have young women. You see them at the county fairs with their animals and their mm-hmm. and they're part of doing the produce and so on, but in your experience, then they're not necessarily going into agriculture after that.
No, but wouldn't that be an important new direction, is to present women farmers at the fair in the same numbers with the same importance as women ranchers?
Mm-hmm. Now, that could be not only an important thing, but it would encourage the young women who think, well, I'd really like to do the truck garden, the vegetable patch, the organic vegetables. I'd really like to do the real farming.
Yep.
It would be a place for them to feel like they had, where they could go. They could talk mm-hmm. to other women and
present what they do, like you
exactly.
present your animals, you present your
right.
harvest.
Which they do, which the adults do.
Yes, but
everybody
let
gets
young
their,
people do it as well.
Right. Now, see, I had assumed, I think, that they were already doing that
well,
young people were involved. They
my impression with FFA is that it's much more livestock driven.
Okay.
And so it's much more about cattle and pigs. And there's always been a huge...
And goats and sheep.
Yeah, there's always been a huge section of the fair that's dedicated mm-hmm. to livestock through FFA and 4-H. The produce is a smaller part of it. There are canners that, you know, basically they enter their canned goods for that. And then there are some produce entries. But this last year at our fair, the entries were so far down. I mean, there were so many fewer canning entries and produce that, I mean, it's really something to get the word out, to try to get people to start doing more entries and to making that a bigger part of the fair again. But
see,
livestock.
I had not had a chance to see it this year. I assumed it had been as large as last year, but it was mm-hmm. down.
It was down.
Now that's interesting, because mm-hmm. we have the beautiful, and we're going to have them on. Every woman's. We're going to have the preserving, the women who are mm-hmm. preserving on. I thought it was a growing program.
It is, but it's just now kind of getting its legs underneath it.
Oh, okay.
There are only 3 or 4 counties that have, in the whole of California, that have sustained their master food preservers status.
Oh.
And so now they're starting to rebuild again. And so Amador County and Calaveras, and they're starting to grow, and they have a pretty strong program now, but it's taken a little bit. So
now, see, that is fascinating, because what that means is that this is a perfect place for people like the two of you to be pioneers, literally, which I see happening all over Amador anyway. I honestly believe among the women, I have not interviewed the men, so they would need to speak for themselves. Pay attention, broadcasters. You could have a show on KQBM that does the men who are making a difference in the Motherlode. But among the women, there seems to be a real renaissance of the kinds of things that we have to offer to our community, and women are joining into those things. Mm-hmm. That's coming through. So your idea that, yeah, what if we involved the young women in 4-H and in the farmers in all of the work that they're doing there, because many of these kids are coming from family farms.
And make, so the work that they're doing at home. On organic and sustainability, because that's the new understanding and the new direction that we realize we need to be moving.
And to have a niche like that, to have Amador be a niche for that, where people felt that they could come. Young women could come, for example, from Davis and learn from our women farmers up here.
Oh, that would be very exciting.
Wouldn't that be something?
I would jump at the opportunity.
I don't think it would take that much to say, we are here for you and this is what we would like to do, for example, to the Agricultural Department at Davis, for the women, specifically for women. I bet you would suddenly have these women raising their hands going, I was hoping some county would have us come out to the farms and work and learn.
And it's such a partnership, too. I mean, with the Master Food Preservers and the farmers, I don't garden. I work full time. And so my extra time goes to my president of the preserving of the food. But when we partner with farmers like Emily, I mean, I can call Emily and say, I would like 30 pounds of tomatoes.
You call me in January.
If I'm organized. And, you know, those relationships help you support your community and keep that networking alive. Yeah. And then also, if I know that I'm going to want to do pickles and I need cucumbers, I could call Emily and say, hey, could you grow cucumbers for me? I agree to purchase these for you in, you know, let me know when they're ready. And those kind of relationships help farmers know what to grow. I mean, they're not just taking a guess.
It's that we have a market for what we grow. And that's one of the huge challenges for small farms. Most of the workshops that I've been attending in the last few years have been in Nevada County, believe it or not.
Wow.
Because they're just, for whatever reason, so much more on board with small farming and having workshops available and taking small farming to the next level and providing resources. I'd love to see Amador become a little bit more involved in doing that for its small farmers. Mm-hmm. But most of the workshops that through the Master Gardener program in Nevada County have consisted of older people. Young people can't afford to do it. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about the challenges of a small farm, a lot of these guys say you've got to be at least 5 acres, farming 5 acres, to even think about breaking even.
Wow.
So economic viability is probably top of the list challenge for anyone.
That would make sense as far as for the young people.
Yes.
Because those of us who have retired, most of us who have been able to afford to move and retire, have a pension of some kind and their social security, or at least their social security, and then they might partner with several other people to live in the home with them or to be joint tenants, and they put it together like that. So that there is enough money in the household that you can have 2.5 acres instead of the 5 acres. But that makes it a really viable way to bring in extra money for an elder household as well. But for the younger people, it is much more of a challenge.
Getting the land, having the markets. There's a really wonderful farm family. He's in his 30s with 2 young children. He and his wife live in Outingdale. Their farm is called Mama Earth Farm.
Mama Earth Farm.
And they are making a go of it. And they are barely making a go of it economically. But
how many acres do they have? Do you know?
I think he just rented a few more. So I think it's about 5. But not all of that is in production. Maybe between 3 and 4. I'm just guessing.
Okay.
But it's a tremendous challenge to be able to do it as a young family and to even live simply, but to have enough money to survive.
On the other hand, sustainability is being talked about worldwide as being the real way, unlike the Green Revolution, which has this huge problems that come along with this huge benefits come the huge side effects and problems of that kind of gardening and farming, agriculture in other countries. there seems to be a trend back towards the sustainable family plot as being probably the best
way to go. You understand the earth as a living entity and that you are a part of that and that your responsibility is to provide for the earth and to nourish the earth and not just take from it as though it's your garbage can and you can throw it away when you're finished with it. There is a new consciousness that we must move in this direction or there won't be a future.
And I think a huge part of that, though, is also from the consumer's perspective in recognizing that you need to pay for food what it's worth. It's like you can't expect to get something for nothing. And what good food, good organic, sustainable food is worth is far more than our culture has taught us to believe. And so when we're shopping for food, oftentimes we're shopping for price instead of shopping for that responsible, supportive, sustainable option in our foods.
Right.
And that culture is going to have to change in order for farmers to be able to make a true living at farming.
That's right.
Because I'm willing to bet that you farm because you love it. Not because you make $1 million.
That's right. I could not do it probably unless I had another income.
Right.
As most young people cannot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So someone always has to work. On the other hand, that's gone on in American culture for many generations that people have had to work out of the home, farmers working out of the home. It's why for a while we were losing family farms because the kids were lost
and
too also to the cities.
To lose it. It hasn't reversed.
It hasn't reversed.
Yet. No.
Okay.
No, it's continuing to.
There are niches, I think, though. For example, near cities where people want more organic food or certainly the movement of farmers markets. Do you sell at farmers markets?
I do.
Which farmers markets
are you? The one that I have sold at is the Plymouth Farmers Market,
okay,
which is the one closest to me. But I also sell to the Placerville Co-op, and we started last year selling directly from the farm, and then I sell to the Motherlode Harvest. And each year, my farm income goes up just a little bit because I learn a little bit more about how to do it better. And people learn that we're here,
mm-hmm.
and marketing is a really important part of farming.
Yes, it is.
You, as a farmer, you have to wear many hats. You can't just be a farmer. You've got to be a PR specialist, a good marketer. What else?
Well, you have to be
a financier.
I was just saying, that's where I was going. You have to totally understand what your input is, and then you're risking what your output's going to be.
Always.
Always.
You're always in dialogue with the birds that eat the fruit, with the gophers that eat the roots, with the deer that eat the leaves, with the insects.
Dialogue was a nice way to put that. That's, I think most people would have said a world
a
war.
Dialogue is good.
No, understanding
yes.
that important relationship is what sustainability is really about.
Now that was a really good sentence. Would you repeat that again or paraphrase it?
Sustainability. Is understanding that you are in relationship to everything that impacts what you do. And it's not about fighting it or eliminating it. It's about working in harmony. That's why we're called Harmony Hill Farm, working in harmony with understanding so that you can survive and get your product, but at the same time not diminish the other life forms that are present in your space.
Now, diminish means that you're not trying to completely eliminate. You're not trying to spread herbicides and insecticides to destroy every beneficial thing around.
That's right. And I don't trap gophers either. I use
now that is brave
hardware cloth okay. to prevent them from getting to the roots of my produce.
Seriously, that is brave.
I'm not saying that there's only one way to go about it. I would shove a nasty smelling organic garlic pellet down a gopher hole anytime, or use water. And I'm not even above trapping them. But my particular approach to it has been that when I can, is to build raised beds and to dig down a foot and to line it with half-inch hardware cloth. And it's a big job, but it's the most foolproof and in the long run, least expensive and least amount of work to keep the gophers at bay.
Yeah, I do understand that, that it would be the least amount of work. Certainly, otherwise, you're getting into movie scripts. What was that one where on the golf course, the guy
puts all that?
Caddyshack. That's the one. That's the 701 that people say, I know how to get rid of gophers. I saw it on Caddyshack. Like, no, don't do that.
Well, Emily, when you tour your farm and you look at your gardens, I mean, there's obviously so much that you're doing right. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. But so tell me some of the mistakes that you've made over the years.
Plenty, plenty.
That would be important for people to hear.
Oh, yes. It's,
and the challenges.
Everything's learned. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Well, before I go in that direction, I have to say that this year's project was to ring our newest garden, which we call the Meadow Garden, which is the sunniest garden, with a annual and perennial pollinator border. And we've gotten halfway around this 50 by 100 foot garden. This is the first year that we've planted the whole garden. We've been working up to it. But that's been so exciting. The pollinators that you've attracted and the beauty of the flowers around this garden, the butterflies, the bees, the hummingbirds, it's just been a glorious experience to take your garden to that level and to welcome all these important beneficials to your garden and to provide for them.
That
as well
like
as
wilderness,
beautiful.
Wilderness habitat. Are you a wilderness habitat farm?
No, but I've been that, backyard habitat.
Yeah, because you were describing it the way wilderness habitat people describe
right.
Their
and there's
plantings.
Some wonderful National Wildlife Federationers have these backyard habitat certification programs, which are just a terrific idea.
So it's similar to that.
It is
what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
But do you do companion planting as well?
Some. I'm not as serious about that, but we do definitely do crop rotation. That's really important. Compost making. That's the most important thing an organic farm can do is to make healthy compost and to enrich your beds every year. We use a rototiller just once, and that's just to get the original soil turned over a little bit. And from there, we just build up, and every year we add compost and some organic rock phosphate, etc., to our soils.
In Amador, do you need to have a designation for organic, and do you have that designation?
Yes, I do. I actually have it with El Dorado County because the majority of my land is in El Dorado County. Until this year when I broke my arm, I was registered organic with El Dorado County and had been for several years. I broke my arm in November a year ago, and it was a serious break, and I wasn't sure when the registration was due just a month later what I'd be capable of, so I skipped a year. But next year we will again be registered organic, and that's the same as USDA. It's the same criteria. It's just you don't make as much income from your farm. I believe it's less than $5,000.
Oh, okay.
But and USDA it's over $5,000, but it's the same. You do the same kinds of things. The same criteria applies. But anyway, if we grow, which we seem to be doing each year, then I'll probably switch to the USDA certification, which is a lot more expensive and a lot more complicated. But for a bigger farm, when your income is over $5,000, that's the logical thing to do.
Can you tell people how much that costs? Because people are interested in Or just a ballpark?
I'm not sure, but I think it's probably around $500 or more. That's just a guess.
And that's every year?
Yes, it has to be renewed every year. And my commitment when I do register organic is that I use only organic seeds. I use only OMRI-approved fertilizers, and I don't call them pesticides, but sprays. The list is very clear about what you can and can't use.
Cannot use.
And we have an annual inspection, which is good. And I feel really good about the way that we farm here.
I'm going to ask a very important question, and that is, what do you do during a drought? Because right. We're in a perpetual...
We're in a serious drought.
Serious drought.
Right.
So how are you managing water?
Back. We have three gardens and only two are in production this year. We use a significant amount of mulch to keep our soil moist. We chip. We don't burn in the fall. We chip things up, twigs and branches when we trim our trees and so forth. For fire, we're doing a lot more defensive space, defendable space. And instead of burning those trimmings, we chip them, and that makes terrific mulch. Mulch is as important to us as compost is, because it's a tremendously important moisture preserver. So we cover all of our beds with mulch.
Okay.
We use drip irrigation, very little overhead watering, and we get the water right down to where it needs to be.
To the roots. Drip right. Irrigation is not easy in a wilderness area like this.
It's not that difficult.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's better than it was perhaps when I was out on my
Maybe
farm.
Maybe so,
when
right.
When it was always
I taught myself how to do it.
Yeah. Challenge.
Years ago, I just taught myself how to do it. And I would check in with the various nurseries and drip places and just take it a step at a time.
Okay. Now, that brings me to another subject, which is, what support do you have?
Technically, I haven't told you the problems either.
Yeah, all right.
I know about the problems.
Yes,
that's the problems. That's good.
Because that's, and that was exactly why I said it the way that I did. Because my point was, okay, when you have a problem, where do you go?
Right.
Susan Bragstad taught me this, because she said, I don't have problems. I have things I need support for. I was like, okay, I'm going to ask that from now on, because that is the way that it is, really. There's
exactly.
a problem that has a solution is no longer a problem.
That's right.
So what kind of challenges that you needed support for have you had?
Oh, boy. Well, we've already touched on a lot of them. The wildlife issues, the deer, you know, the gophers. 10 years ago, I became a master gardener. I took the training, and I was in the program for 9 years. And that's a tremendous resource. Not only is it a community service outreach where you give back to the community.
Now, that's the state, sponsored.
That's correct. It's sort of a partnership of the master preservers. And Amador County has a very active, as most of the counties in California do, a very active chapter. And so that was a tremendous 10 years ago opportunity for me, was to take the training, because it's through the auspices of the University of California, and all of their resources come to play in the training that you get, the books that you use, the instructors that you have in your training. Are all...
Workshops? Do they have workshops?
Absolutely. They're okay. All UC personnel. So you just get the best of the best. And that was probably the most important thing that I did. Okay. And then from there, that opens up a world of other resources. And you just begin meeting people and networking. And there's wonderful farmers who've been here for a really long time, and they become your mentors.
Now, Susan had indicated, and tell me if this is true, that she felt that men were very supportive of women who are doing their own farms for any purpose. Have you also found this true?
Yes, and I found some wonderful women who are doing it. As I said earlier, most of the women in this, people in the CSA, are women, older women, and they're tremendously knowledgeable, and have, some of them have lived in the area for years. They've grown up in the area, so they.
And there are men who have been willing to help
yes.
you too, and
oh,
been fair
absolutely.
And kind to you, and not
never.
Said, "Oh no, not a woman."
Oh, never! I have no. never had that experience.
Okay, now I think that that's a special thing to say, because when I was even mentioning to some women that we were going to be discussing women in agriculture, they said, "Oh, that would be hard around here in Amador." And I said, "That's not what I've heard.
No,
that's not what I've heard. That the men are." They give sound advice, and they're happy to help, and or to send someone over, and if they can't be of help, or to tell you what their resources are, and that they're very encouraging. You have found that true.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And when we started direct from the farm sales, half of my customers have been men. So women are not the only people shopping for their families.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that I think is significant. The people who might not believe or understand that really would be the urban people. Those of us who have moved from urban areas are not used to that approach in our businesses, that the men would be helpful.
Really?
Would you agree?
Oh, no, I don't know. I don't think so. But I have lived here, gosh, going on 20 years now, and so I'm very used to it. And it's like any time that I have needed help with any type of agricultural issues, I mean, it's... Doesn't matter. The men, the women, I mean, everyone has stepped up and really helped out. Daniel DiAgostini is working with Amador High School to create some gardens. And we've kind of worked on that project a little bit together. And one of the main, drawing a blank on his name, but in Calaveras, there's a husband and wife team that are working on gardens in the schools that they're called Gardens to Grow In. And the gentleman that works on that, he's a teacher at the junior high there, and he is amazing. The resources he has and the support that he gives his community and all of the schools, they have these programs that they're working on very, very diligently. And so I see a lot of men working through that and very supportive of agriculture.
See, what I'm saying is that coming from the Bay Area, things have gotten very so competitive that women are not experiencing that the men are helpful to them and their businesses. So it's interesting to me, coming from that area, to hear how supportive the men are over their women doing everything that has come onto every woman's hour. It doesn't matter what the woman wants to get involved, and they've been not only behind her, but not taking over any part of it, just in the wings and having the woman do what she needs to do, and totally trusting her around her.
I do not ever get the feel that there's any competitiveness in the agricultural community. I mean, everyone is really helpful to, you know, promote each party. And there's been years where I haven't been able to find tomatoes, and I would call one farmer and I say, I need 30 pounds of tomatoes. And they're like, I have nothing. Let me call around and see what I can find for you. And a few days later, I'll get a phone call. It's like, I found this person over here. They have some for you. And this person has the other 15 pounds that you need. So it becomes kind of a family project for me to get my tomatoes or any type of vegetable I'm looking for.
Well, I think that's a beautiful network. Okay. It's a beautiful network because it encourages, this show is specifically around how women would feel about getting involved in this, both as a business or just as an avocation. And either way, what we're saying is that they'll get full support of the community around them. Mm-hmm. And that's a very special thing, because when women are beginning something new, it's scary. And
anybody can begin something new.
Exactly. Well, in this case, for our purposes of our show, we're talking about especially women whose kids are getting older. Mm-hmm. A lot of our listeners are people whose kids are getting older. They're in school and they're thinking that they'd like to do something else again, but they haven't worked out of the home for years, and they wonder what they could do. And to say there's many resources for what you'd like to do winds up being very important to them. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we have a couple of minutes before we're going to finish this interview, but I can see that we will need to come back to this farm.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And I would be happy to do that. And so would Andrea. I think to take this, just even take one farm and take it through all four seasons might be a lot of fun. And this would be an ideal one. I think because it also by having 2.5 acres, you're starting with something that people feel like they can grasp their mind around. Once you get into the 5 acres and the family farm and the and machinery and things that you wind up needing, that's a totally different ballgame. This one sounds
doable to a lot of people. It is. And to start as a gardener and then just take it up a notch, it is not that difficult.
And we've talked about the master gardening programs, and we'll get more involved in what happens with the through the seasons with the women who are preserving all of this harvest. And I think that it'll be a lot of fun to take that through the seasons. If you wanted to encourage people to get involved, if you could tell us just for you what this all means to you, what is it that you were looking for that you found and why it's meaningful to you at this point in your life?
I'm an earth-connected person. I love to be in the out-of-doors. I love everything about living on this planet. The earth is my home, and I cherish it. I love hiking in it and kayaking in it and growing things in it and celebrating the life that we know on this planet. To share healthy food that's delicious with your neighbors is a deep joy to me. Not only to grow it myself and to know the deliciousness of the first tomato of the season, or a melon that's just dripping with sweetness, or corn, or anything that you grow, and being able to share that with your neighbors and customers is a tremendous source of satisfaction. And to know that you are improving the soil, that you're not depleting it, but that you give back and nourish it, and all of the life of the soil and the life that surrounds you, that you live in harmony with it, feels like you're walking the path that you're supposed to walk on this planet.
And for you, you had mentioned that you love to celebrate all the seasons that you have here. What do you mean by that, by celebrating?
To enjoy them, to be in harmony with what every season brings you. Even the bleakness of winter, which is an inward time, has chores and beauty and things that need to be done during that season and things that can be celebrated during that season. The rhythms of life, it's going through the rhythms of life and taking each one as it comes and embracing it and doing what needs to be done in it and enjoying what it offers and then moving on to the next one.
Can I ask what it was you had taught that led you to being the kind of person that you are now, living the life you're living now? What were you teaching?
I was an elementary and middle school regular ed and special ed teacher for 35 years in San Francisco. But more
in
than
San
that,
Francisco. Okay, that's more than that. That was a leap of faith there.
Yes, and I didn't grow up in a farm family, but I had grandfathers on both sides that gave me a genetic predisposition to love the earth in that way. And I've passed it on genetically to some of my three sons.
To your three sons. Are any of them involved in this kind of work?
Yes. One of them is a horticulturalist and comes up a lot and works with me on the farm. Another is a biologist who's working and doing research with the national parks and lives near Sequoia with his family. And the other one is a lover of all things outdoors, and particularly animals, and is working with animals as his career.
So you have passed all of this on to the children you teach, to the children you raise, to grandchildren that they are raising.
Hopefully.
And now to an entire county of people who are listening to this interview and who will hopefully read also about you and who you've been teaching every time there's any opportunity that you have, it sounds like, including the recent
farm tours.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to do our own farm to fork dinner and have people come to the Freddo.
We're there.
I'm in.
Next summer, we're going to do it.
Fantastic.
That meadow has this wonderful place where you can sit and look at the garden and the forest and eat from the garden and eat lamb from a nearby rancher.
Okay.
So
and farm to fork is something we will also include you in. We're going to be doing more interviews with the farm to fork because we're thinking women that Amador is going to become a farm to fork mecca.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, count me in.
You will be right there, queen of the mecca. Thank you so much, Emily, for this interview.
Thank you so much for coming.
Every minute we will have. Many others, I hope, with you.
I hope so. I hope you can come back and
we will come
back. See the winters up here and the snow on the ground.
We will come back. This is going to be a project. I think this project, Miss Andrea, is going to be bigger than we ever thought.
Certainly ongoing.
Yes, and certainly ongoing. Thank you so much.
This was long.